On the Grueling Truth Sports Network, the NFL show is brought to you by Path of Purity, the best CBD on the market, time release over 12 hours. Right now, you can get a special by going to pathofpurity.direct, 2 bottles for the price of 1, so make sure you check them out at pathofpurity.direct. I'm your host, Mike Goodpaster. Right now, I'd like to welcome in my co-host, Sam Teets. How you doing, Sam?
I'm doing great, Mike. How about you?
All right, and today we're going to go and grade the new coaching hires, the guys that have been hired so far. We will also look at potential landing spots for Deshaun Watson. We're going to start off, though, grading the new coaching hires. And when we look here, I think we've got some interesting picks. We're going to start off with the Jacksonville Jaguars and Urban Meyer. And what's your take on Urban Meyer here?
That's the only place Urban Meyer could have fit. Because you're going to have a bunch of young guys who haven't necessarily hit the big money contracts yet. People like Lawrence you take them, or Zach Wilson, depending on who you ask. If it's me or you, I say Lawrence, you say Wilson. But either way, those kind of guys, Josh Allen, defense, you're going to have a bunch of young players you might be able to influence here. But I can't see this working out more than maybe 2 or 3 years, right? I mean, it's going to end here 2 or 3 years in, because at some point these guys have to see through what Urban Meyer is. Urban Meyer is the kind of guy who is not ready for the NFL. And I'm surprised he made the jump, because frankly, I think you can only go downhill from here. There's very few guys that transition to the NFL successfully, and Urban Meyer does not look like one of those guys to me.
Yeah, zero NFL experience, several health-related retirements, and controversies at both Florida and Ohio State. It seems to me like 2 or 3 years is the cap before he has a health condition anyways. And I'm not making light of him. I mean, he, passed out during a Big Ten game a couple years ago. So there's a lot to worry about when you hire him. And I think right now, I mean, Saad Khan, who is the owner of the Jacksonville Jaguars, has to look at Meyer as a guy who in Jacksonville, you know, he's a household name in Florida. He's going to put butts in the seats. Combined with Trevor Lawrence, I think your first year, you're going to get a lot of buzz with this team. But I don't know. I think it's definitely worth the risk for Jacksonville. How about that?
Yeah, I could see that. I could see financially it might be worth the success or worth the risk, because you're going to get, like you said, a lot of people in the stands. It's going to be very interesting. This team will be maybe what the Browns were 2 or 3 years ago, where it's all the hype coming in of all these young players and stuff like that, and that just doesn't work out for a couple of years. I don't think you're going to have success under Urban Meyer. I think it will take the next coach to ultimately put it all together. But Urban Meyer, I mean, this is a guy who got so in his own head, so stressed out about losing college football, that he literally made himself unhealthy at times to the point where, like you said, he had the migraines that you just couldn't get rid of. Stuff now is caused from stress. You have to realize you're Urban Meyer. In a 16-game season next year, you're probably going to lose 12 games. And are you okay with doing that? Can you get over losing 12? And that's my biggest question. I don't know if he's able to. He has the personality where he's able to cope with losing that many times in a single season.
Well, the only question here is he good enough to win no matter what? He won at Bowling Green, and people forget that. I mean, before he went to Florida and Ohio State, this was a guy that was winning 12 games in a season at Bowling Green. So he's definitely a great football coach. There's so many red flags here that it looks to me like it has disaster written all over it. And whatever quarterback he picks, the guy better be a stud right away.
Well, yeah, because he's going to have to start right away. And that offensive line, unless they do something crazy in the draft, they're going to have offensive line issues. Because they've drafted guys like Joyler from Florida and Cam Robinson from Alabama in the past 4 years. And, I mean, maybe you've seen their tape, but I don't think either one of those guys has turned out to be an even average player at this point. And probably going to be turning into journeyman in a couple of years. So I don't know if you're Jacksonville. You're putting whatever quarterback you have at a lot of risk going into that situation. They're going to have to play well immediately. Is Urban Meyer going to ask them to?
All right, let's look at the Los Angeles Chargers with Brandon Staley. And I think if you look at Staley's career, you could say this is definitely a meteoric rise. I mean, just 5 years ago, he was coaching at Division III John Carroll University. He's 38 years old. He's had just 4 seasons of NFL coaching experience prior to succeeding Wade Phillips as the Rams DC this past year. And before that, he was an outside linebackers coach. So you're going to have to excuse me here. I don't totally buy into this. And to be fair, though, the Rams D was really good. I think they ranked 5th or 6th in the NFL. But you have to consider the situation. LA arguably needed an offensive-minded coach more than anything, with Justin Herbert emerging at quarterback. if Staley could bring aboard a top-tier coordinator, that's great. But what happens when that top-tier coordinator departs in a year or two? And I just don't believe here that Staley is the key to unlocking Herbert's upside.
Wait, the surprise was Brian Daboll, who's the offensive coordinator for the Buffalo Bills, apparently thought he was going to get a really good shot at this job for the Chargers. And he was kind of blindsided when they ended up going with Staley instead. And because that makes sense. I mean, taking someone like Daboll, who worked with Josh Allen, who obviously had a lot of downsides, had a lot to work on, he's very raw with the NFL, and is now an MVP candidate, you would think pairing someone who worked with him through that process would be better than taking picking someone like that and pairing with Herbert would be great, as opposed to taking Staley, a defensive-minded guy who has 1 year as a coordinator. And frankly, he inherited a defense that Wade Phillips worked on for a long time that was already decent defense. And you have guys like Aaron Donald, who's the best defensive player in the league when healthy, and Jalen Ramsey, who's arguably the best corner in the league when healthy, combined with a lot of very good drafting by the Rams. I mean, how much of this is Brandon Staley himself, and how much of this is a product of the team just drafting well and having a lot of talent on the defensive side of the ball? So I don't know. I don't buy into this signing at all. I think this is probably the worst head coaching one so far, just because there's not much to go on there. There's very little history here. This feels like taking a young guy.
Yeah, and it is the Chargers, who have a poorly run organization. Now let's go to another poorly run organization, the New York Jets. Robert Saleh, who was the San Francisco 49ers defensive coordinator the last 3 or 4 years. And at first glance, to me, this looks like a reversal of course from the failed Adam Gase experiment, whereas Gase was kind of a quirky, supposed offensive-minded guy with some really weird-looking eyes. Sale is an intense, player-friendly defensive coach entering his first job atop a staff. If you're a Jets fan, though, the 180 should be embraced with open arms, I would think. In today's NFL, offensive head coaches are ideal, but what Sale lacks on that side of the ball, he more than makes up for with widely lauded leadership, technically sound instructions, and an astute upbringing under offensive minds like Pete Carroll and Kyle Shanahan. And at the very least, the Jets should be more engaged and disciplined in 2021.
Yeah, I've spoken to some Jets fans who are a little bit worried that this is going to be another kind of Todd Bowles situation, because they remember what it was like having him in there. But frankly, they've had more success under Bowles than they did under Adam Gase. So it's got to be an improvement no matter what. And Robert Saleh, working with the 49ers, I mean, he had some great players on that 2019 team that was arguably the best defense in the NFL. But this past year, you trade away DeForest Buckner. Richard Sherman played, I think, all 5 games. I think Bosa played 2 games. And you missing all these star players. This was still one of the best ones in the NFL in terms of yards. It was top 5, I believe, in total yard. And doing so with, like I said, all those pieces that are missing, and the leadership we saw from him, all the people who have spoken up and saying that Robert Saleh is a great person, has a locker room, a great leader, it makes me think that this is probably the best the Jets could do. There are very few players out there. Maybe there are very few coaching candidates out there, maybe besides Daboll, perhaps, that I would think would have been a better hire for the New York Jets. And they do have some very talented defensive players in New York, so I'm very interested to see when you pair them with their defensive-minded coach.
Yeah, and all of a sudden, the AFC East looks like it could end up being the best conference or best division in football. I mean, you've got the Buffalo Bills already, who look built to succeed with Sean McDermott. The Patriots still have Bill Belichick. You got to assume they're getting better. Brian Flores is a very good coach. I would make this case. I think it's possible, if not pretty much a slam dunk, that the AFC East has the 4 best head coaches as a group in the NFL.
Oh, so they're the best coach? That's interesting. I didn't think about that, but you're probably right. Because we just go through round divisions, it's not going to be the AFC South. We can just cross that one out immediately. Mike Vrabel's the only one who stands out to me there as a good head coach. AFC West, no, because it's only Andy Reid over there. AFC North, it's John Harbaugh, Mike Tomlin, but then it kind of drops off a little bit there, even with Stefanski. The East, I don't believe in yet. The North, not really. Yeah, I mean, it makes sense. I'm looking across the board, there's really no other coaches, maybe even 3 good coaches. We know, in fact, there's already 3 good coaches in the AFC East, including the best coach of all time, Bill Belichick. And if Robert Saleh can another good name to that list, it's going to be a great division. But could the Jets pull something off, or could the Jets get to 8 wins this coming season? I think it would be very difficult in that competitive division like that.
I don't think it's that difficult to turn it around, even a 1-win team to an 8-win team, the way the NFL set up right now. I mean, if you go in, you attack free agency, you hit a home run in the draft. The question is, are they going to go with Sam Darnold, or are you going to go with one of the rookies that's coming out? I would lean towards Darnold, and we'll also get to the possibility of maybe a Deshaun Watson, who then makes this a slam dunk.
Well, yeah, if you add Deshaun Watson to that team, I mean, that kind of changes everything. At that point, despite having some talent deficiencies along the offensive line, still better than what Watson has in Houston. I think you could see the Jets potentially being the second best team in the entire division then, if you add Deshaun Watson.
All right, next up, we got the Atlanta Falcons with Arthur Smith. Arthur Smith's a guy who went to Tennessee, did a great job revamping that defense with Ryan Tannehill and Derrick Henry. The question here is, how good is he, or is this more the fact that he's got Ryan Tannehill and Derrick Henry? And Derrick Henry's don't grow on trees.
No, he's the only another running back with a defensive end like that. It's just not going to happen. So he arrived in 2019, same time Tannehill did. And that was when Derrick Henry started to peak. My question is, they added some offensive line talent that offseason. I remember that. They signed someone away from the Rams. They added a couple pieces to that offensive line. You're not going to have that in Atlanta. Atlanta's offensive line has a lot of former first-round picks, but there are a lot of aging players, and there are also a lot of mediocre players there. So I don't think you're going to be able to run the ball. And who's your running back even? I mean, you think Todd Gurley's a free agent after this year. Does that mean Ito Smith is your top option as a running back? Arthur Smith's going to have to change how he calls offense here, because you're not going to have the same personnel in Atlanta that you have had in Tennessee.
All right, next up, the hot topic in the NFL right now, other than the conference playoffs that are coming up or the conference championship games, Deshaun Watson and his most likely landing spots. I'm just going to throw 5 to 10 out there for you. We're going to look at the pros. We're going to look at the cons. My number one's the New York Jets. And I think the things that are working against the Jets, you got an absurdly high state income tax. What people forget, you got the lack of available weapons. You will have a new head coach in an unknown culture. But New York is a place where if you could succeed, the sky's the limit, especially extra money on top of your contract, if you know what I mean.
Well, yeah, and you mentioned the income tax, but my dad is a Giants fan. He used to tell me all the time about how much money Eli Manning made off of sponsorship deals in New York. So at that point, I think that would make up for it. If you go to New York, that's a mega city. You have all these opportunities to market yourself, to sign these brand deals. So I think that's very attractive because that's so much extra money on the side that you probably can't get in a place like Houston, even though Houston is a decent-sized city. Places like New York, L.A., they're just different. So going there, I think, is a huge attraction to making money. Now, I do think you have to like what the Jets have. They're closer than I think most people expect. They're closer because they have some decent offensive linemen. They got some weapons to throw to, and they have some decent pieces on defense. Just can you fill in the crack here and there and make this?
Yeah, and really, to me, what really makes this a sell if you're to Houston, Texas, the Jets have a pair of first-round picks in 2020, a pair of first-round picks in 2021. They have multiple third-round picks in 2021, multiple fifth-round picks in 2022. And I don't think there's a team better poised to make a run. Plus, you've got this. Houston would need a starting quarterback. You could have Sam Darnold as a throw-in chip that could manipulate this pre-draft. And you can net all kind of additional picks. So I think this is a win-win for both teams. And this is the place that it makes the most sense for Watson to me.
Yeah, and Watson, like you said, you get all the picks back. And that's something that most teams can't offer. New York can do that. And you can also send down and save a bunch of money. Deshaun Watson's cap hit this year, I believe, is just around $10 million. So Deshaun Watson up to over $30 million next year. But this coming season, he's only a $10 million cap hit. So if you're the Jets, you can go out there and try to chase some free agents because you're going to have cap space, assuming you send Darnold to Houston this deal. You can have Watson and still be able to sign a couple of big-ticket free agents here to improve your team all around. I think getting Watson and starting up with the new coach with Robert Saleh is the perfect move for New York.
Yeah, and I think it's a perfect move for Watson because you get access to a prime media market. An organization that seems to be trending in the right direction with the head coaching hiring. You've got an additional bonus of Mike LaFleur as the offensive coordinator, and that's Kyle Shanahan's system. That's a draw for quarterbacks around the league. And if the Jets could get a handful of pieces up front and at receiver, I think this is a quick turnaround with Deshaun Watson in New York.
We talked about how Miami turned things around basically in 2 years. I know they didn't make the playoffs this year, but they still won 10 games. New York could be even fast-tracked to doing that if they just get Deshaun Watson. He's going to have to be willing to deal with losing probably for one more year, because I could see them winning 6 or 7 games, but not making the playoffs, especially because of the division they're in. But if you add him to the New York Jets, they are probably a year away from being a playoff-caliber team or winning 10 games. So I think that you have to be optimistic here. If you're the Jets and if you're Deshaun Watson, this is a situation that you can build very quickly and get to a playoff-caliber level.
All right, let's look at the San Francisco 49ers. We talked about how a Kyle Shanahan offense is what a lot of NFL quarterbacks want to play in. Kyle Shanahan's the head coach in San Francisco, and Watson has a no-trade clause, so he can kind of steer this in any direction he wants. The problem I have here, if I'm the 49ers, is I simply don't think they have enough draft capital to match some of the other teams on the list, especially the Jets. The Niners do have first-round picks in 2021 and 2022, but there aren't many additional throw-ins. The Niners are missing a third-round pick in 2021, for example, because of the Trent Williams trade. Jimmy Garoppolo is an interesting piece to this equation, which could give Houston a starting quarterback. So when I look at it, to me, the 49ers is the perfect situation if Deshaun Watson wants to go win right away. I just don't know that the 49ers have enough to give up to get him from the Texans.
We've talked about this a couple of times already. When Jimmy Garoppolo comes back, if he comes back next year as the starting quarterback for the 49ers, they're set up to make a playoff run. And frankly, they might be set up better than the Rams at this point, because the Rams have Jared Goff as their quarterback. Garoppolo can't worse, could pod better. And they have just as many good defensive personnel as the Rams do to some extent. So I think the 49ers are a playoff caliber team next year, even without Dotson. So you add him in there, and you're talking about maybe a 12 or 13-win team that could potentially win this division and get a top-two seed in the NFC. The issue you mentioned, of course, is the draft capital. They don't have the picks to make this deal. So I wonder if there's anyone on the roster that could include. I wouldn't think the Texans would be interested in adding much outside of Jimmy Garoppolo. I'm sure he would have to be involved in the deal for the money to work here. I don't know. I mean, you got Richard Sherman's a free agent. Trent Williams is a free agent. You're probably going to want to get Trent Williams back and sign him to a contract. I don't know. I don't think the money is there for San Francisco, but it would be the best landing spot immediately for Deshaun Watson.
All right, the Miami Dolphins, another one everybody's talked about, where the rumors are Deshaun Watson wants to be a Miami Dolphin. Of course, they got Tua Tagovailoa there. They could always send him to Houston in return. And, you know, when you look at Miami, they have 6 draft picks in the top 114 this coming season, but no additional picks in 2022 to toss into the fray. I don't think they have as much draft capital that they could trade as the Jets do. But still, to me, if Deshaun Watson's in Miami, Miami becomes a Super Bowl contender immediately.
Yeah, they'll be on par, if not better, than the Buffalo Bills potentially at that point. And because of the no-trade clause that Watson has in his deal, you mentioned he can kind of steer this discussion to where he wants it to go. And if he's saying, I want Miami, I want San Francisco, I want one of those two teams, and the 49ers obviously can't offer as much as the Dolphins, if Watson's at a point where he's just saying, look, I'm done, I'm not playing in the Texans ever again, they might have to accept something a little less than what they anticipate, and maybe that will get Miami into the conversation where they can trade for Deshaun Watson. You also have the intriguing prospect of Tua Tagovailoa, who I know you're talking about now. You don't think he's going to work out as a long-term star in the NFL anymore.
No, he won't. That's simple, he won't. I think there's going to be injury issues his entire career.
Really? So this is a bit of a reversal from where I know you mentioned this already once before on the show, I think earlier this week or maybe last week, but what makes you change your mind from entering this season to where you are now? What did you see during his rookie that kind of makes everything switch?
He does not look comfortable in the pocket. He doesn't have the pocket presence that he seemed to have at Alabama. I think the game is still moving really fast for him. That could change. But my other issue is he's not a big guy. And he had injury issues at Alabama. He had injury issues this year with Miami. I think there's a lot of red flags here. And it's a lot of red flags if I'm Brian Flores and I'm a head coach that right now everybody's singing the praises of, because it only takes losing Fitzpatrick to somebody, which will probably happen. And then Tua's your guy. He gets hurt. Next thing you know, you're 6-10, and you may not have a job the next year. So I just think with Tua, there's a lot of question marks. I think there's a lot of question marks with Justin Herbert, which I don't think people really realize. I think there's questions with both of them. And I think they're both, if they're, put it like this, if both of these guys are in the top 10 quarterbacks 4 years from now in the NFL, it would shock me.
Well, with Tua, we talked about this a little bit earlier. When he's in the game, they're not throwing very many deep passes. They're not throwing many advanced routes or advanced plays. The offense is very sluggish when he's in the game. You see Ryan Fitzpatrick come in sometimes in the fourth quarter, and within 6 minutes have more passing yards than Tua had our game. I think that's a bit of the issue, is that Tua just is not explosive enough to get this offense to the point where they can beat some of these lower-level defenses. And if you're Brian Flores, you have to start feeling the pressure here, because your team's been winning more and more the past 2 years. It's been a very quick turnaround. But the expectation next year is pretty much playoff or bust. So I think, obviously, Deshaun Watson gives you a much better chance of making the playoffs, and Tua is still a bit of an unknown there.
All right, the Pittsburgh Steelers, any chance they would make this move that would be completely out of the characteristic of the Steelers to make a move like this?
Pittsburgh's front office is far too conservative to ever attempt something like this. I mean, I would, get me wrong, I would love it. I don't care if we have to mortgage our immediate future to get Deshaun Watson. I would love to see him in the black and gold, but it's never going to happen. There's no way Pittsburgh actually goes out of their way to try and make a deal like this, even though you obviously don't necessarily want Ben Roethlisberger back for next year. Even though he says he wants to come back, that's a train wreck waiting to happen. That's not going to work out well at all. So I think there's a lot of issues here. The cap is an issue. Pittsburgh doesn't have that many draft picks. They have a decent amount, but not nearly as much as someone like the Jets or the Dolphins. I can't see this working out at all. And you know what? Even if Deshaun Watson went to Pittsburgh, they might win 10 games, but they're still going to get knocked out in the first round next year.
I don't know. I mean, it's according to what else they add. I know they're usually not huge in free agency, but that defense coming back, still a top-ranked defense. And if Big Ben would have played at the pace the last 6 weeks of the season that he played the first 10, they might still be alive in the playoffs. And when you talk about mortgaging the future, I don't think there is a future in Pittsburgh unless they have a replacement for Big Ben.
Oh, come on. You don't believe in Mason Rudolph and Devlin Duck Hodges and Joshua Dobbs? You don't think those guys are going to carry Pittsburgh to a 10-6 season next year? Or,
you're proving my point awful. Right
it's
now.
Not looking too good.
Yeah, so you're not really mortgaging your future when you don't have a future. Right now, I think if they trade for Deshaun Watson, they're actually trading for a future. Next up, what about the New Orleans Saints?
Yeah, this is an interesting one. I think this would make a lot of sense for the Saints. They have a bunch of big contracts on their roster right now, but you could probably move some of those guys to Houston because they are very talented. So I think you could convince the Texans to take on some of the deals they have on this roster. And you do need a replacement for Drew Brees. I know they talked about keeping Jameis Winston, but the drop-off between Deshaun Watson and Jameis Winston is astronomical. Even though Winston is a quality quarterback, he's nowhere near what Watson is. You throw Watson in an offense featuring Emmanuel Sanders, Michael Thomas, and Alvin Kamara, and one of the best offensive lines of football, you're immediately the Super Bowl favorite. Regardless of what Tom Brady does the rest of these playoffs, regardless of what Aaron Rodgers does the rest of these playoffs, a Deshaun Watson-led Saints team, they are the Super Bowl favorites immediately. So I think that would be a very attractive situation for Houston. It's not in the same conference. It's in a different conference. Maybe that's something that helps grease this deal, makes it more reasonable for the Texans. But it would have to be a significant return to get Watson. It would probably involve some big-time contracts coming from New Orleans to Houston.
All right, here's another one, an interesting one. And they do have the draft capital, I think, to make a run. The New England Patriots.
Oh, please, no.
Why not?
Don't even flirt with that idea. I don't want to think about Deshaun Watson being coached by Bill Belichick. That would be a nightmare. So then just 10, 15 more years of New England dominance, because that would be what happened. Deshaun Watson's a great quarterback. He has athleticism, obviously more athleticism than someone like Tom Brady. Brady is the GOAT. But I think you're worth it. Getting Deshaun Watson and pairing with Bill Belichick, they don't have much offensively. That's obviously the big issue. No receivers. The offensive line has some pieces, but not totally. I think they would become not Super Bowl favorites necessarily, but that's probably an 11 or 12 win team if you add Deshaun Watson, right? Because you're still missing stuff defensively and you have new receivers.
And if Watson goes there a decade from now, everybody might be calling him the GOAT.
You never know. I mean, you could with Bill Belichick and some good old coordinators, you could change everything. You could turn everything around immediately.
Well, Belichick has to live to he's 80 years old and be coaching football, though, but that's the other advantage there. The Las Vegas Raiders, because I know John Gruden is in love with Deshaun Watson.
Yeah, and he seems to have a rocky relationship with Derek Carr, and like flirting with bringing in Marcus Mariota, and there was a thought that maybe Marcus at some point would replace Carr during the season. Derek Carr is a very good quarterback. But Deshaun Watson just is on another level. So you can trade Derek Carr somehow, get Deshaun Watson. I think you would make a deal in a heartbeat. That might be one that if you can throw in the necessary draft picks, the Texans might not feel too bad about it. You get Derek Carr, still potentially a top 10 quarterback in the NFL, a couple of first round picks. You might feel pretty good about that. And they have some receivers in Nelson Agholor, Hunter Renfrow, Henry Ruggs, who's still developing. There's more weapons there than there are in Houston right now. And Josh Jacobs at running back. I think that would make this Raiders team capable of finishing games, which they haven't been able to do the past couple of seasons. I would still question whether or not he would still find a way to catch this up, but it looked like they would be headed for the playoffs at the very least.
All right, what about the Chicago Bears? 8-8 this season, but the playoffs two of the last 3 years. They have been short a quarterback the entire time, I think. This would make them not short a quarterback. What do you think about the possibility for Deshaun Watson to be in a Chicago Bear?
I think this is a situation where Deshaun Watson waves that no trade clause right in front of the Houston Texans and says, no way in hell am I going to the Chicago Bears. I mean, no offense, but Matt Nagy and Ryan Pace, the general manager and head coach, they're not horrible, but they're probably on their last legs. If it doesn't work out immediately this year, they're changing head coaches no matter what. Allen Robinson, the only really attractive piece there in terms of a passing option, he's a free agent. He's not going to resign with the Chicago Bears. He's made it known he's unhappy with the Chicago Bears. You don't have a line there. The defense, which was elite 2 or 3 years ago, is now middle of the pack to maybe slightly above average, despite having a lot of talent. I think there's no way Deshaun Watson allows himself to get traded to Chicago Bears.
All right. What about the Washington football team?
That one, I think he'd actually – that would be a better move for Deshaun Watson. I think there's a chance that could happen.
Well, I think you've got a really good head coach, your offensive coordinator, Scott Turner. I think that's a check in the positive. They are healthy salary cap wise. Hell, they could run with Alex Smith as their backup quarterback then, which is what he is.
Yeah, he should not be starting next year. I think he would probably retire before going to a backup role, but as you see what happens. Either way, Washington needs a new quarterback. You've got Terry McLaurin at wide receiver, Antonio Gibson at running back. And the offensive line, assuming you keep Brandon Scherff, you have him, Morgan Moses, Chase Ruler, I don't know how to say it in the last name, but those are three solid offensive linemen as well. Defense, you have, like I said, all those great players up front. You're getting Landon Collins back from injury. This is a playoff caliber team. They should easily walk through their division and win it with maybe 10 or 11 wins. They'll easily make the playoffs. I think Washington would be a reasonable spot for Deshaun Watson.
All right, finally, the Denver Broncos. I mean, this is a blue blood franchise. The only problem I see here is you got to deal with Kansas City for, two games out of the season. You're competing with them for the division. But the Broncos have a top 10 pick and four picks in the top 105 that they could use as tender for a trade conversation.
Well, wouldn't it be fun to see Deshaun Watson versus Patrick Mahomes twice a year? I think that'd be a great QB to see. And there are some good pieces here in Denver. I remember I picked them to make the playoffs, something you've never let me live down. But they have some good pieces there.
Just because I realized.
I know, I had to bring it up, though. You were probably going to bring it before the show ended. I figured I'd cut you off and do it right now. But
I don't think
there are some good pieces here. I like Jerry Jeudy. I like Garrett Bowles at left tackle. They've got some young guys inside, like Dalton Risner and Lloyd Cushenberry, who are just starting to get adjusted to their positions in the NFL. Noah Fant, tight end. They're loaded at running back with Royce Freeman, Melvin Gordon, and Phillip Lindsay. And defensively, you're getting Von Miller back next year. This is the makings of a playoff caliber team. I just don't know if you want to play against Patrick Mahomes twice a year.
All right, let's go to a little NFL news. Kansas City Chiefs coach Andy Reid said Monday he didn't know whether Patrick Mahomes would be clear or would clear the NFL's concussion protocol in time to play Sunday's AFC Championship game. But Reid indicated Mahomes might have felt well enough to have returned during Sunday's game. And now they're saying that maybe he just had a pinched nerve in his neck. I didn't know a pinched nerve in your neck can make you stagger around like a drunken fool, though.
Yeah, it certainly looked like a concussion. And they were saying what happened, and maybe the blood flow got cut off his head briefly, which is why you can't do that. It was like maybe a tackle took maybe half a second. So you're not getting cut off blood flow.
It's no big deal. I mean, if the blood flow gets cut off to your brain for a few seconds, it's not a big deal. Just get your ass back in the game and play.
I just, I, I can't see how it's not a concussion. There's got to be something going on there. And he was jogging around his lip. We've seen people get concussions before and jog around afterwards. I mean, players try to make it look like they're so they can go back in the game. Like, if you have a legit concussion here, then you won't know if he's ready to go or not. There's no way you know today if he's going to play or not. You won't know until Thursday or Friday at the earliest.
Yeah, and I will go back to this. I think they're playing him no matter what. I mean, this is the championship game. Yeah. They're going to play him. And, I mean, I don't think people understand how serious this is. Or they do, but they just paid lip service to it when a trip to the Super Bowl's on the line. And I can tell the story. My son, high school, senior year, playing a national championship game, gets hit, goes down, gets back up. Everything seems all right. Doctors check him. Now we think he's okay. He goes out. He plays a couple more series, plays great. Gets hit again. Didn't get hit hard. But all of a sudden, he runs over to the sideline after the series is over, drops down on his knees, puts his head on the ground, puts his hands over, and starts crying. I mean, the thing is this. This is too serious to be messing with. And if it was Josh Allen and the Bills, who I've predicted to win all along, I would still say he shouldn't play. This is not worth the risk. They're going to play him anyways. I'm sure everything will turn out fine. But it just sends up a red flag to me that when the NFL says that they care about player safety, they're full of crap.
Yeah, because they care about player safety until it's time for a big game. There's a lot of money on the line. They want to put out a premier product. They don't want to put out Chad Henne versus Josh Allen. They want to put out Patrick Mahomes versus Josh Allen. And the Chiefs want to put out Patrick Mahomes. They want him to start because they know that with him on the field, they have the best chances of winning the game. So, well,
and I would think this. I would think the Bills want him to start too.
Yeah, because you want to beat a full-strength Kansas City Chiefs team, right? You don't want to beat Chad Henne to get to the Super Bowl. People will say you have a cakewalk there then.
Yeah, and then after you win it, they'll say, well, yeah, but would you have won it if Patrick Mahomes would have played?
Yeah, and that would really be the competition from now to the end of time.
It's football. I mean, it's just what happens. Antonio Brown received good news on Tuesday. His knee injury isn't significant enough to guarantee he'll miss Sunday's NFC Championship game. But the MRI on Brown's knee didn't reveal any serious issues. He's considered day by day. Antonio Brown is a big player in this game, I think.
No, and we talked about this a little bit heading into the game against the Saints, where he didn't really play much of a role. But before that, we thought he would be a huge piece in that game because, I mean, let's face it, he's not the player he was in Pittsburgh, but he's still a pretty good player. I mean, up against a slot corner or a third-string cornerback on a field, I mean, you have a huge advantage there. So if you're the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, you're looking to Antonio Brown's. He still has, I think, 5 touchdowns in the past 6 games. So he's still scoring quite a bit. And he's going to be a key piece here when they go up against a team like Green Bay that has good defensive backs like Jair Alexander, who's going to lock down whoever he covers. I think he had a lot of like negative 3 yards last week or something like that. He was tremendous against the Rams. So I think Antonio Brown will be a big player here. He's going to have somewhere between 60 to 100 receiving yards if the Buccaneers are going to win this game.
All right. Any other NFL news you want to discuss?
I think we hit on everything except the Eagles. The Eagles looks like might get a new head coach, and he might be offensive. I'm blanking on his name right now, but he might be the offensive coordinator for the New England Patriots, the same one who turned down that Colts job a couple of years ago.
Josh McDaniels.
Yeah, I don't understand that. I don't get why you would hire Josh McDaniels to be your head coach.
Well, it's the Philadelphia Eagles, though.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they got lucky with Andy Reid. Then Doug Peterson came in, they won a Super Bowl. Now they're going to go back to being the Eagles that, you know, we knew so well in the 60s and 70s. And I mean, it's just the Eagles are not a greatly run franchise. Josh McDaniels failed in Denver. He used the first round pick on Tim Tebow. That's all I got to say about Josh McDaniels. Eric Bieniemy, there's a lot of red flags. You know, I'm not a huge Eric Bieniemy fan, but Eric Bieniemy deserves this job before Josh McDaniels.
Well, you know, a lot of Josh McDaniels' success has been because Bill Belichick's in his ear there on the sideline. It's not all Josh McDaniels, all the credit, but really, Bill Belichick has a lot to do with that, I'm sure. And so did Tom Brady when Tom Brady was there.
Yeah. Well, and it's why, I mean, the Bruce Arians thing, did you see his comment about how Tom Brady was now successful because he was letting Tom Brady be Tom?
Yeah, I saw that. I was like, come on, Bruce. What are you talking about?
He hadn't even got to a Super Bowl with Tom Brady yet. So I guess if they lose to the Packers, letting Tom be Tom was a mistake, right?
Apparently.
I mean, does Bruce Arians...
There's a lot of stuff that I just...
I mean, Bruce Arians just makes me want to punch him in the face whenever I see him on TV, even, especially with his little COVID stuff. I mean, it just looks like a fat dude standing there. And I don't know. He had the big thing strapped around his chest, I guess, for that. And I don't know. I mean, to me, Bruce Arians is just full of crap most of the time.
Well, Bruce Arians has a lot of sound bites this year from press conferences that make me scratch my head. I'm like, I don't understand what your coach. You're the head coach here. Do you not understand that you're the head coach? You're supposed to like be in control of this football team. And he's gotten in Tom Brady's way to some extent early in the season, doing what he wanted to do versus doing what Tom Brady is good at. So I don't know. Bruce Arians, to me, is just a lot of funny stuff.
Well, and the sad thing to me is if they win a Super Bowl, it's going to be because of Tom Brady. It's not going to have anything to do with Bruce Arians. But which Bruce also Arians tells me it's going to be – that also tells me, though, that it's going to be really hard for Tom Brady to win a Super Bowl.
Yeah, I mean, Bruce Arians, to me, has not been a guy who's helped his team much this season. He's gotten in the way a little bit.
Yeah, and let's face it, I'm not convinced on LaFleur in Green Bay. I just think he may have Aaron Rodgers. But eventually in the Super Bowl, you're going to have to match up with Andy Reid or Sean McDermott. That's a mismatch. Bruce Arians can't easily. Hang with Yeah.
Yeah, I don't care who comes out of the NFC. The AFC is going to have the better coach.
Yeah, and the AFC will probably win the game because of that. But if they don't, it's going to be because of Tom Brady or Aaron Rodgers, and it's not going to be because of the coaching. So, All right, anything else, Sam?
I think that's about everything.
All right, we are brought to you by Path of Purity CBD. Make sure you check them out at pathofpurity.direct. It's something you take it, it immediately goes into your bloodstream and actually will release every few hours for 12 hours. So you take it in the morning, it's the only time you got to take it. Right now, they got a special. You get two bottles for $75 or free shipping. All you got to do is go to pathofpurity.direct to get your order in. Make sure you check them out. I've tried it before. My entire family has. I highly recommend it. So, Steve Risley, if you're watching, maybe this would calm you down some. But just figured I'd throw that in there. All right, guys. Remember, you can follow Sam Tease at SamTease33. You can follow me at Grilling Truth. You can hear our shows wherever you find shows. We are live Monday through Friday at 1 o'clock every day, talking NFL live on YouTube, Facebook, Twitch, Periscope. I don't even know if Twitch is still alive because I think it says it's a dead link now, but you can see us on a bunch of places. Also, go over and you can check us out on Rockfin. But for now, for Sam Teets, I'm Mike Goodpaster. You've been watching and listening to The Grueling Truth, where the legends speak.